You've come after a long time.
Yeah.
How are you?
Fine.
Anything to share?
Yeah, actually, thing
One
is,
second.
yeah, actually, thing is, I am slightly autistic, so in new place, a lot of times because I have this condition, I may behave in slightly different manner. So a lot of times I feel that I am maybe not accepted at that place and all, and how do I change this outlook of things? And B, because there have been instances where I felt I am not accepted or things like that.
It's quite simple. Firstly, to accept totally that you didn't make yourself autistic. The first acceptance that it was God's will. So, no guilt, no shame, no feeling bad. To accept the quality as God given. Now, the next step is to accept that society, by and large, does not like anything which is not considered normal. It is ingrained in society that if there's someone slightly different, the attention goes there and perhaps their behavior changes. So to accept that they too are designed a certain way, designed by the same power. Now, when we accept ourselves the way God made us, and accept society the way God made society, what we are left with is to deal with the situation at hand. So any drama which we would otherwise create, why has God made me this way? Why has God made other people that way? All that questioning is now dissolved. Now Agastya has to deal with the situation. And how can he deal with the situation? He can deal with it in the way he feels best, knowing that the results are not in his control. So life starts becoming very simple. Why? Because the mind is now not creating stories. Yes, in the situation you have described, you feel unpleasant. You are bound to feel unpleasant. Thereafter, what can I do about this feeling? Now, various options present themselves. One is explain to people if I feel that they are slightly open that look, this is something I have, so please, if you could be mindful of it, I would appreciate it. Two, if that feeling does not arise to even say this much, then to decide that do I want to be there or should I leave? So these are two examples, two possible responses of Agastya, which are objective, they are not against someone, including others or himself. So, like this, there might be other options which present themselves to you. So, a decision is taken, outcome is not in my control, but that is how I live my life. So, when this load of people doing something to me is removed, or the load I'm carrying myself is removed, I find that whatever pain is there in the moment, whatever discomfort is there, it is momentary. I'm not living in that discomfort all the time. And how am I living in that discomfort? When I'm in my mind always hating, blaming, condemning people or myself. When that story is removed, I'm back to my basic situation and how to deal with it. I might find in some gatherings I can express myself, in some I can't. It will change all the time. It depends on how I feel on a certain evening. My emotions can also change. It can vary. It's not like there's a one fixed rule to apply. For example, someone who does not have this issue may decide there are three social invitations. Where do I feel like going? Where do I not feel like going? Depending on that person's week, what they have gone through that week, whether they are in a mood to be social or not social, they have to take a decision. They take the decision. So similarly, that's precisely what you have to do. But this teaching comes in as a soothing balm because mostly people who do not have an exposure to the spiritual dimension of any kind get lost in the story of blame, finger pointing, and hate. What this teaching does is it removes that. When it removes that, what becomes one's experiences, one is not suffering the situation psychologically like one used to earlier. But the pain in the moment is there. The pain in the moment is there. That cannot be avoided because the situation has been designed that way.
Yes, thank you.
It's so simple. Now, let's take another example. Supposing you had a physical deformity, or anyone had a physical deformity. We had a girl in our college, I didn't know her at all. She had a huge physical deformity. It was like this whole part was swollen out in our college days. And everyone used to stare at her. Natural, no? Something which is not normal. So your attention goes there. And people being people, sometimes they can't control themselves and they stare endlessly. And I used to think what issues, traumas this girl must be going through repeatedly. First of all, she's a girl. Secondly, she has been given this thing. But then the realization was that was her destiny. And the hope was that some guidance in any form has found its way through to her to deal with the situations she is facing and will face most likely all her life. So whenever I have an issue, as my teacher would say, it helps to think that perhaps there are people going through much worse than I am. Now when he would say this, someone would object, look, I am only concerned with my situation. True, true. But tell me whether this is right or wrong. Someone once came to him, they were having a challenge, a financial challenge at work. So my teacher asked this person, are you still getting your fixed monthly salary? He said, yes. So my teacher said, why not for once think of the millions below the poverty line who don't even have a job? At least that much. Now what happens when the thinking shifts? Earlier, the thinking was poor me? Why did God do this to me? And the ego feels like the victim. Now, there's a realization. Everyone is carrying their cross in some form or another. Someone will have another issue. I have this issue. So when I realize that this is the journey of life, we all have different challenges to deal with. We are all in this together. This is something for me to learn from and resolve so that no matter which gathering I go to, which people I meet, my peace of mind will not be taken away.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else? Is it clear or
yeah,
do you have any doubt?
Understood.
Yeah. The problem, Agastya, is by and large, the human condition is one of madness. It's like there are mad people in a room. So when a normal person walks in, they think he is mad. You see? And what does something like this make us? Rather than bitter and resentful, it makes us more sensitive to others. That is what happens. There's so much we can't see, but we judge by what we see with our physical eyes. That is what happens. That is the grand deception. Now, the space between you and me is a lot, right? Between where you are and I am. There is space, but we don't see it. We see the object. Crazy. Totally crazy. When you look at the sun, you don't see the space between you and the sun. You see the sun because the sun is an object and these physical eyes focus on an object. The space allows the objects to be. That is how important space is, right? But attention doesn't go there. If something happens in my life, the attention goes to the event. And then that event is judged as good or bad. Does it give me pain? Does it give me pleasure? But what about that space in which the event arose? Imagine I'm silent. For 5 minutes, I'm very quiet. And then a phone comes. Whether good news or bad news. Wouldn't it be accurate to say that phone was received on the bed of silence because silence was there. And when I put the phone down, there's silence because I'm no longer talking to that person. But what happens is, although the bedrock is silent space, an event happens, the mind latches onto it, and then I start thinking about that phone call and all the implications, what the person said, what must I do next, is there fear, is there happiness, and the chain of thinking starts. When I'm more and more at peace with what is, with the situation, I'm more at peace with it, it means I'm resting in that space. Of course, any situation will create a ripple. This is the human condition. But I will not drown in that ripple anymore. Because I know by and by, my own life's experience, you are young now, but even by now, you know. Everything comes and goes. Some pleasure arises, it goes. Some pain arises, it goes. That is life's experience. So you start automatically resting more and more in that space. And the quest for that space is so deep that that is what is pulling you here. That is already there within you. It just needs to be recognized, recognized. Cognition has to be recognized, to be seen in a different way. At a deep level, one knows this. Anyone drawn to the spiritual path, according to me, if not everyone, most people, are destined for peace. Otherwise, even that first movement would not happen. So, something to be happy about. That is why I think it was that Hafiz quote which I put in one of my books. Ever since happiness heard your name, it has been running through the streets trying to find you. Unbelievable, right? But this true happiness is what is finding you, but it appears that you are finding it. Otherwise, the first movement would not have happened. Now, another option for someone with autism is certainly therapy, because I am not qualified as a therapist, but I'm sure that they have something which would be of immense benefit to deal with certain situations. So that can be explored also, if one is drawn to that. This is the therapy of being. This is the therapy of being. Imagine, without you knowing it, someone puts a gold coin in your pocket. You don't know it. And then this person tells you, "Hey, Agastya, somewhere in your environment, I've put a gold coin." So you go room to room trying to find it, without knowing it's in your own pocket. You search everywhere, up and down, cupboards and all that. Can't find it. Because you don't know it is with you. And then this person tells you that the coin is in your own pocket. So the coin was always with you, but the awareness of that coin was not there. So it is as good as the coin not being with you. Then someone comes along and tells you, "Hey, there's something very precious, very valuable, which is with you, very close to you. But because you were looking outside, you didn't realize it was so close." Because the nature of the world is external, we are looking outside for happiness, outside for things, and then we are happy or sad, happy or sad. I remember in London there used to be a store called Lush, which used to make these soaps, handmade soaps, and all these things. Very funky brand. And one soap brand name was Happy for Sad. This is what happens. As long as we are externalized, happy or sad, happy or sad, happy or sad, then we realize there must be a true happiness which does not depend on the external world. What is that? That is the gold coin in my pocket. When that is discovered, I am no longer swayed by what happens in life like I used to be. Nothing can shake my foundations like it used to earlier. When there's happiness, I am mindful. I enjoy being happy, but I know who knows what's going to happen next. God has not guaranteed me happiness after happiness after happiness. Hasn't guaranteed anyone. No guarantees. Anyone else would like to share anything?
Yes.
Sure.
Would you
stick to this?
How does one deal with the programming that we go through when we are children of our subconscious mind, and that drives our automatic behavior throughout adulthood? And most of the times you don't even, not even aware of the patterns that exist within us as automatic behavior. So how does one get out of that, of the trauma that gets induced and the programming that happens?
In childhood.
Or through previous lifetimes, or, I mean, I guess the, you know, you start becoming aware of the programming, but you still can't get away from it.
All you can do is try, correct? Now, the first step is to be aware that there is such a programming, because 90% of humanity is suffering their programming unconsciously. They are not even aware that this is their pattern, which is creating psychological suffering for them. Now, the realization that I had no control over this programming, I couldn't help it. I could not help being in a certain environment which gave me my conditioning. I could not help coming into this existence with a certain nature. This thought itself is a big relief, because it means I did not create my programming. Now, if I did not create my programming, how do I think I can change it? This is a very important point to understand. I did not create the programming in the first place. The programming makes me suffer. What do I now do with this suffering? Because I'm conscious that I'm suffering. If I was not conscious, I would suffer all my life. This is the stage where I have to trust. That force which made me aware of my programming needs to be trusted and allowed to play its role without the me trying to hijack that. Now, how does the me hijack that? By feeling I can stop my suffering. Now, the intent and the earnestness, by all means, is recognized. The person does not want to suffer anymore. Who would want to? Once you're aware of your suffering, why would you want to continue the suffering? So, as it is said in the Gita, you do whatever you think and feel you should do, knowing that the results are not in your control. So what happens? What is your name?
Sandeep.
Sandeep. What happens? Now, I don't take the burden of the outcome on my shoulders. Perhaps I would have earlier. Now, I know I am simply an instrument of the divine, designed a certain way, programmed a certain way, like everyone else. Certain programming is making me suffer. What can I do about the suffering? Do precisely that which I think and feel I should do, knowing that that power which gave me this set of programming is ultimately in charge. So my journey out of suffering, so to speak, becomes lighter. It does not become goal-oriented like it used to be. I try my best, depending on my definition of best, and that is how I move along. As Maharaj would say, the road is the goal. The road is the goal. So because I am now no longer focused only on the outcome, this journey of life, the spiritual journey, lessons to be learned, is being lived in awareness. That is all that happens. And I keep trying my best. But this is not a small thing. When there's a total acceptance that I am not the doer, which means not only that I did not create my programming, but I am not in charge of the outcome, and also others are not the doers, I really find it's as if I have wings on my shoulders. If my sense of doership is deeply entrenched, I suffer more and more because I feel guilty and I feel ashamed. Guilt and shame can weigh me down a lot. Guilt and shame for what? For the way God made me? So by and by, as I navigate through life's journey, if I have understood aspects like guilt and shame, I will, if I'm living a life consciously, try my best to see I don't make others feel guilty and ashamed. My nature becomes sensitive. If I see flaws in the other, I tell myself I have my own flaws. Yes, the problem with trauma, as with all trauma, is I see everyone through the lens of that trauma. If someone has abused me in my childhood, a particular gender has abused me, I will see everyone as a potential for that abuse, no doubt. But this teaching consistently points to one thing, that we are all instruments through whom God's will functions. When this understanding sinks in deeper and deeper, I find, rather than being hounded by ghosts of the past or fearful of an imaginary future, I am more and more in the present moment, dealing with the situation at hand. That is what I find. The present moment, the acceptance of what is, being in the now, is honored more and more, rather than being mired and lost in the poor me. That is what happens. And being consumed by sorting myself out. Consumed by sorting my... Everything is a consumption. Oh, I must sort myself out. Really? Is it true? We had published a book which was very popular in the 70s, I think, called Bringers of the Dawn. It was about a race called the Palladians. It was very popular at that time. But one sentence really struck me, which I had underlined in that book. Human beings love their drama so much that they get lost in the process of processing. Human beings love their drama so much that they get lost in the process of processing. Everything is processed through the mind. Cause and effect, the mechanics, dots connecting. We are stuck in that mode. I'm seeing you after a long time, right? Couple of years, maybe? You're from London. Good memory, isn't it? And that is the burden of memory. All that has happened to me in the past, I carry that burden of memory of what people did to me and what I did to people. That is why my teacher would never tire of saying nobody truly does anything. Yet, in this manifestation, consequences have to be faced of actions. So they are faced. It does not absolve one or the other of the consequence of the action. But when this is lived, there's peace of mind.
So if we are not the doers, why should we face the consequence?
Because you're operating in society. Everyone will have to be accountable for their actions in society. The common response is, oh, if I'm not the doer, I can just pick up a gun and kill people. Is it so? You will still only do that if it is your nature to do that. If someone is shy and timid, they may or may not do that. Or there may be something deep within which is buried and they may do that. We don't know. What is meant to happen will happen. But there are consequences of your actions. Like my teacher would say, a murder is committed. Now what happens? Sometimes the murderer is caught, sometimes not caught. Sometimes the murderer is caught, not enough evidence to convict him. Sometimes the murderer is caught and he escapes. Or sometimes the wrong person is caught for the murder. Which of these outcomes happen after the action of the murder is committed is not in anyone's control. You could call that the divine will in operation. In the 80s, We knew of an industrialist family who had taken a lot of money from a lot of people, and everyone had filed cases on them. But somehow, they paid their way through each and every case. Each and every case, they avoided going to jail. Ultimately, it was not their destiny to go to jail. We don't know. So we really stop looking and telling ourselves that things should be this way. This should be the outcome. That is the suffering. We don't know. The rivers of karma run deep. We are judging by seeing very little. Does that help in any way or no?
I'm sure it helps.
This time, did you happen to be here on a Sunday or?
Yes. So I arrived yesterday.
Even she came this morning from London.
Oh, you live in London? Which part?
Actually, I live in a place called Northampton.
Northampton. Visiting family here?
Some friends, yeah.
In spiritual family. So, what brings you here?
It's a manual. Just manual.
No, I mean, what brings you here?
Anisha ji, so... I'm on the non-dual path, and I follow Shaivism, and we were connected. We've been connected for a while, actually.
Kashmiri Shaivism?
Mm-hmm. So, we talk and we're friends, and so she said that I might like it, so that's why we came.
We came? Oh, even you thought you might like it, that's why?
No, she said I might like. So,
just joking.
Oh, I see.
How is Kashmiri Shaivism?
Please tell us.
I don't know. I don't think there is much difference. But the texts that I study come from Kashmir, I guess, isn't it? I don't know the difference. I think most Shaivisms are the same. They're a non-dual path.
So is this something you resonate with, what you're hearing here?
Yeah, sure. What you're saying is obviously correct. I do resonate with it. Obviously, my study is a little bit different. But,
And you feel that Kashmiri Shaivism has given you more and more peace in daily living?
It's not just a piece, actually, it's beyond peace. And obviously, Nisargat Maharaj, I've read all his books, and I resonate very closely with him. And that's another connection why we came also. But it's given me more than just peace, actually. It's given me a very deep contentment or freedom that I think nothing else has given up to now. And I've been on a spiritual path all my life. Different spiritual paths.
That's beautiful. So would you say the outcome of that deep contentment or peace is harmonious relationships?
I think that's a consequence of it.
Is your experience?
Yes. If it doesn't mean that the relationships are necessarily harmonious, but the outcomes of any communications don't affect me. So I don't get upset and I don't get extremely happy because of an interaction. So the internally my own experience is that my fluctuation doesn't happen anymore. The ups and downs in life, that doesn't happen. I don't know whether that makes my relationships better or not. I don't know. I'm not looking at it from how it's affected the relationship between me and the world. It's more about the relationship between me and myself, or the ultimate self and the individuality, the two. So it's that relationship, I think, that it investigates and uncovers, and as you said, recognize, that recognition happens about who I am.
Yes, but it cannot but help include the world.
No, that happens as a consequence. That's true, because you live in the world, right? But it doesn't mean that every single, for me anyway, this is my own experience, every single interaction will be harmonious. Where you have to be assertive, you will be assertive. Where you have to be timid, you'll be timid. So it happens like that. But it doesn't affect me in the sense that at one point it used to be that when I was not right, I used to feel bad. Or when somebody didn't used to listen and I knew I was right, I used to feel bad, or things like that. That doesn't happen anymore. It's more of an acceptance, I think, of whatever the outcome. As you were just saying, you don't know the karmas. So you do the action according to the present moment, and the outcome, you leave it. It doesn't really matter, actually, the outcome doesn't matter. You just become the witness of it. I think that's the best I can explain it. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but that's just where I am at the moment.
There is an experience of peace, but somehow it's still separate from certain aspects of my life.
Can you say that again?
There is an experience of peace, but it's still separate from some aspects of my life. And for a while now, I've said, I know that it's a repeating pattern, and I let it be. It arises, and I see it, and I see it, and I see it. But it doesn't change.
Sure. That is the human experience, right? Let's say most situations I'm peaceful. But there are some, especially those which push my buttons the most, based on my conditioning and what happened to me in childhood, that trigger me. Or I cannot find my peace in those situations. That is the human experience. And as you so rightly said, all you can do is be aware of it. That is why my teacher would say, the seeing is the only doing necessary. The beauty of this is, you can see how helpless you are in those few situations in which you are not tasting peace. You see the hand of God which created certain conditioning for you, certain experiences based on which you are operating, like we just said. And the realization is, just as these are my pain points, others have their own pain points. So the way these situations would have weighed me down earlier, although they are still there, when the seeing is happening, there is a sense of detachment, which was not there earlier, perhaps. I see it being repeated. Hardwired conditioning, as my teacher would call it. Some conditioning is hardwired. It's not easy to find peace in that. The peace is found in the knowing that all I can do is try my best. The results are never in my control. So while I'm suffering those situations, I'm not adding to the burden of that suffering by a continuous blame game being played out, by continuous hatred, condemnation, ill will, which perhaps was there earlier. Now that has started dissolving when the concept of non-doership has been understood. Yet the movement is there, the trigger points are there. And in those moments, I'm not at peace. Even that is witnessed.
But my sense is that I have those moments when I'm not at peace, but it gathers up, you know, it becomes a big thing. And then suddenly one day I'm sitting with like this avalanche of no peace, and I'm sucked into it again in a very deep way. And I don't know how to get around it. It's just...
But that avalanche, after being introduced to the teachings of non-duality as you were in the West and here, you don't feel there's any shift or change in that?
There is, but it's such a It's so stubborn and it resurrects itself every day when I wake up, and it will not go away. And I'm so tired of seeing it. I'm so tired of letting it be.
So many of us are suffering our personalities. So many of us. Again, I say people on the path are consciously suffering it. It's such a feeling of helplessness. And that helplessness is so beautiful because it shows we are not in control. And more importantly, nor are others. You see, this teaching will constantly emphasize on the other. This teaching will constantly emphasize on the other, perhaps unlike other teachings to this degree. Why? Because if the realization is all there is the one self, it must include the other. And that is why Bhagwan said when he was asked, how do we deal with others? He said, there are no others. That is why the emphasis on harmonious relationships. Because your relationships with people, your relationships with yourself, and your relationship with what happens in your life is a reflection of your relationship with God. If you see God in everyone, your relationship is with God.
Yeah, I see how the separation happens the minute I get stuck there, and it's so torturous that, yeah.
It is.
I see what you're saying. It's just, yeah.
This is when the word surrender becomes of prime importance. Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. The ego reaches that point. One could call it the dark night of the soul. When it says, enough.
Yeah.
Now, I surrender to the feet of the source. I have tried my best. And that surrender can only happen. Yet, the individual can help a bit by getting out of the way. Like I mentioned at the retreat, that comic strip, where a woman goes to the therapist and he says, what seems to be the problem? And she replies, it all started from the day I was born. The therapist is going to get rich.
Justin, as a corollary, so when this happens, this tends to happen, I lose sight of what is trying my best in this situation, detaching from it, seeing it, or acting according to what is right to me. Because any of this is not helping. None of it is helping.
So you are the perfect candidate for surrender.
Acting with a sense of helplessness.
Sorry?
Acting with a sense of helplessness.
Either this way or that way or that way. Which of the three ways is based on how I am designed? If I have to try all three escape doors, I have to try all three escape doors. I may second guess door number one or door number three or door number two. That is the mind going through the cause-effect dynamic. But the realization, whether I'm opening door number one first or door number three first, not in my control. If I am designed to open door number one, I open door number one. I think I am doing it. When I can live this realization that the higher power is moving me precisely the way it is, then which door I try to open becomes irrelevant. Because imagine, you are in a passageway and there are three doors which are shut. Outside is a beautiful field and the sun is rising and the birds are chirping. The view is the same. You don't know. And you are wondering, will door number one give me this view or door number three give me this view? The mind thinks, if I open door number one, I'll see the same view which I want to see. Bright sun. But the view is the same from all three doors. So when we try too hard to control this game, to force the outcome, force ourselves to open the right door, we suffer. And that is the additional burden of psychological suffering which is imposed on us.
Actually, now I don't want to say anything, but but still, I'll just share a story. Like, long while ago, when I was passing through my darkest night of the soul, if you can say, like, you know, very, very sad days, and I was with Brahma Kumaris at that time. So I just happened to meet one sisters. You know, there are sisters who can, you can go and vent out, and they are be the good counselors. So she gave me a very good advice, which comes on surrender, which she said, I'll talk it in Hindi. So she said, Anisha Ben, Draupadi ko bhi Krishna tab madad karne ke liye aaya tha jab usne dono haath upar kiye the. Jab tak uska ek haath saadi pe tha na, wo nahi aaya. You know, when that it was happening. So this is what I just felt, if I have to go through this, I'll pass it gracefully, if it is His will to move me this way, like, you know. So I just felt like this little me, like, you know, comes every now and then for the grace to just flow and take care of itself. So this is what it is, like, you know, we often wonder what surrender is. The surrender is only that you have to drop me. I mean, it's, but it's too big to drop me. Yeah.
Two questions I have. One is, you know, you're talking about harmonious relationships. So what is, how do you see harmonious relationships on the battlefield where Krishna is talking to Arjun, that whole episode of the war? Would you consider that harmonious relationships?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. That's what I wanted to know, because I didn't.
But I'd like to clarify this, because there can be a misconception. In the battlefield of your life, a harmonious relationship would be that the person who has troubled you the most and has pushed your buttons the most, you have the realization that this person was playing out their script, their blueprint, which was designed by God. How, based on their conditioning, their environment when they were growing up, and therefore truly they are not the doers of their actions. If I have this realization when I'm dealing with such a person, I would consider it a harmonious relationship. But if I'm harboring thoughts of them being the doer of their actions and doing something to me or having done something to me, then it is an inharmonious relationship. Yet, in the battlefield, even after the realization, I have to do what I think and feel I should do. So I do that, but I am no longer fighting individuals like I used to be.
But that makes me not an individual as well then, doesn't it?
Certainly.
So the second question coming on from that, is there a God?
It depends on your definition of God. You know, the briefest definition of God, if it can be lived, God is what is. God is what is. Not what should be, not what could have been, not what was. I think it was Emerson who said, if we meet no gods, it is because we harbor none. You see, if I start seeing God in everyone, what is in my mind all the time is God. So simple. Simple, no? That is why Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi said, the truth is simple and that is the truth.
Is it not interesting, because
as the definition, what you describe, what God is. So in manifestation, because, you know, we have an idea of God. We have an idea that God is always good. But when it comes into the manifestation, and if all there is God, he is the evil and he is the good.
God is the totality.
Totality, yeah, exactly. So it's all-compassing. It's not secluded.
True. Yet, if we go a bit deeper, The Bible says all that God made was good. What does that mean? Without him was not made anything that was made.
Good and bad is the eye of the beholder.
Not really. No. Good and bad are the polar opposites in duality of every conceivable kind.
So it's the person who's looking that's making it good and bad, isn't it?
Not exactly. No.
How can you just like...
So we have to investigate what this means. So
I do get it. What is bad for me, not necessarily it's bad for her, bad for her because it's conducive for her, it's conducive for her, it's just bad for me. So in that way I feel, oh okay, then there is no bad. Okay, coming to a conclusion, but that's again not a deeper understanding. You see, it's just very...
Well, the conclusion would be in the living of it. When I am living this deep peace, I am no longer polarized between the good and the bad like I used to be. No doubt. No doubt about that. That is what Goldsmith called rising above the pairs of opposites. Or, as it says in the Bible, my kingdom is not of this world, does not mean a kingdom up there which is not of this world. It means a kingdom which is not mired in the polar opposites. But anyway, that's for an exploration another day.
There's a poem by Swami Vivekananda, Kali. He had a vision of Kali towards the last years of his life, where the recordings, the Holy Mother has all that is good and auspicious. And on the other side, then he says, talks about her as terrible, terrifying, as plague, as disease and death. So that's like the total vision that he had of the Divine Mother.
Yes, sorry. One sec for the recording. Are you Prachi?
Yes.
Ah. The Badams are helping me.
How many a day?
Five.
So I sort of all the questions that were asked, including the question that I had. So all the suffering really comes from the conditioning only.
Is
the sense
could
I'm
say that
getting.
Sure.
So if the issue that I'm facing with is very funny actually, because over time my investment in a lot of things has reduced, is what I can see. There's more peace, there's more simplicity in life, but there's one situation where my mind still gets stuck, and it's not as important as the other ones that I've been able to deal with, which I find very funny. So I just keep wondering, why is that happening?
Because that is one issue which is still to be resolved. So it's not as big as the other issues as have been resolved, but this is still an issue for you.
So I have observed and I see it, and I realize that the error is in the reference point. I'm still dealing with it as a person. I'm still stuck with that conditioning, with the history, I see it through that filter, which is the error. I even see that. Why am I not able to come out of
it? That is precisely everyone's question. And you're very fortunate because you say you have resolved the big issues and the small ones, so you should rejoice. That is precisely it. Yes, perhaps you can sit with that particular issue. Try and see if there's a nuance which is buried deep, which is creating some resistance, and whether the foundation of that itself is a form of doership. So by all means, if one wants to contemplate on it, try to understand it better, see what's really going on, because we have blind spots. There are things we don't see, either because we can't see them or because we don't want to see them. So to be objective, to be honest, to understand how come all these big issues are resolved, but this small thing is still unresolved. And you will be quite surprised to find that it is quite likely based on some form of doership. Quite likely. And so therefore, even this small situation has to be offered to the source. You see, like I constantly give the example of Joel Goldsmith, who had the realizations. But in his early days, he said, I could yet not get myself to love everyone. There were some people I could not love. I just could not love. So he said, I was wondering how to get out of this, that felt oneness with being and love was all pervading, but there were some people I could still not get myself to love. And he said, it struck him one day. And the prayer which arose was, God, I can't love these people. I've tried my best. So you love them through me. Then the change happened. What is that? Giving up that one issue. Giving up that one issue which I'm holding so dear to my heart. Why? Because perhaps, if I'm honest with myself, I am still deriving an identity from it. That is why I'm holding it close. Because who will I be without this issue? You see, I don't know. Without this issue, who will I be? What is my identification with this small issue? Amazing. It's really amazing. When the truth starts revealing itself. But you see, Prachi, you are very blessed because it sounds as if this divine fire has burnt all the big issues and only one small log is left unburnt. Sooner or later, it'll catch fire. I really tell people you should rejoice if you have a spiritual journey, not just this, any wisdom teaching, any master, because the game will end sooner or later. It is really a question of gratitude and rejoicing. No matter what troubles you are going through mentally, something has struck a chord, resonated deep within, is a celebration. More importantly, there may be something in your life, again, some videos you've seen, some teacher you go to, some path you follow, which you just look forward to it. You just look forward to it. Maybe you feel, I'm not getting enough out of this. But still you're looking forward to it. Why? Because something has resonated. But yes, it will help if that is identified. What is it that I am resonating with the most? And the measure we have of that is Sukha Shanti. You see, because the mind is very deceptive. It can think the more knowledge it acquires, the more it is resonating. It's figured it all out. But the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So that measure becomes very important. That is why Ramana Maharshi said the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. He did not say the state of bliss is the state of bliss. The state of equanimity. That is the proof. So it is very unlikely that you are in an equanimous state, but you're taking other people's peace away. Unlikely, wouldn't you say? Therefore, relationships.